Reporting on the games you love by people who love to game. The MMO Reporter Network.
You, my friend, are listening to the Happy Hearthstone. This show is brought to you by Doghouse Systems, who make some of the most powerful gaming PCs on the planet. And I can say from personal experience that they have awesome customer service. Use the code MMOReporter at doghousesystems.com and get a free 120GB SSD. And by Audible, the best audiobook service in existence. Seriously, if you like stories at all, you've got to check Audible out. Go to audibletrial.com/MMOReporter and get a free 1 month trial and a free audiobook. Those ads help cover our server costs for the show, but if you'd like to directly support this show and the nice people who make it, you can go to gamediplomat.com/donate and show us some love. Thank you very much. Hello and welcome to episode 83 of the Happy Hearthstone Podcast, the longest running Hearthstone podcast in the history of space and time and cards. I'm your host, Josh Augustine, and this week I'm joined by Gernoise, a.k.a. Jarrett. Hello, Gernoise Jarrett. Can I just combine it into one word?
Sure. Hello, Josh. Hello, everyone.
How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing good. So, Gernoise, this is a name that people know you by on the internet. You said you preferred to be called this.
Some people might know me by that name, but it's my handle on most things like Twitter and stuff. And if anybody tries to find me, that's going to be the name to look for. So,
okay, Gernoise, I like it.
Thanks.
So, let's talk about why you're here. Obviously, I assume you like Hearthstone. Is that why you're here, or for some other reason?
A little bit.
Okay. So why don't you tell people like what aspect of the game are you into? How long have you been playing? Why do you love it?
So I've been playing since shortly after Blackrock Mountain. So I guess that's almost 2 years now.
Yeah, long time.
Yeah, it feels that way. I play mainly constructed, standard since that became a thing. A little bit of the other modes here and there.
Okay. Standard constructed, so not much arena.
No, I do arena every once in a while, but it just feels like it's so dependent on how good your draft options are. And I don't play often enough to always be up on how the meta is. You know, is it slower, is it more tempo based, and if you don't do that with arena, it's hard to be consistent.
Yeah, it's really like a almost in some ways a totally separate game meta wise. You have to be aware of like, oh, everyone's running weapons right now or for whatever reason, so acidic swamp booze is actually really important and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think it's more unique and more different than constructed than I think most people realize.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's what's interesting is everyone that comes on the show is always constructed. And we have our token arena guy, Ryan, who comes on and he just tells us everything about arena, just blows our minds. I don't know. Maybe arena just isn't as popular. Well, I guess clearly it isn't as popular as constructed. But people that love arena really love arena.
Yeah, for sure. And I think part of it, too, is what kind of time do you have to devote? I mean, a lot of my Hearthstone playing is 2, 3, 4 games here and there. You know, if that's the way you're playing, Arena isn't really the mode for you.
Yeah, a lot of times, like, because inherently, there's nothing wrong with playing Arena like that. You could if you wanted to. But it's really hard for me to, like, get back in the mindset of what the deck is and what it was trying to do and what it struggled against. Like, I feel like I have to play it all at once just so I remember all my goals with the deck.
Yeah, if you're going to do well with it, you do. And I've actually had situations where I've done well with a deck and I actually get worse at playing it just because I get tired of playing that exact
you're
same.
Like, just get me out of here, let me lose so I could move on.
I've definitely had that attitude in arena before, even sometimes after, you know, just 5 or 6 wins, the few times I've actually gotten that far even, and that's not a good way to feel about the better you do in it, the less fun you have.
That's not the mindset of a champion is all I'm saying, Jarrett.
Definitely not. So I kind of know my limitations with arena, and I do it, you know, once every 2 or 3 weeks.
All right, so let's talk about why we're happy this week. I'll go first. So you might notice a little
extra bassiness to my voice this week. I was super sick. Actually, so I've been homesick the past 3 days, right? And I'm home by myself, so I don't talk. And I had to call my dentist the other day because they sent me a crazy bill. And I hadn't talked all day until I called them on the phone. And I actually freaked myself out when they answered. Because I was like, hi, how's it going? I sound like a monster. What am I doing? It was terrifying.
Yeah, I know that feeling.
Like a nightmare or something. So I've been sick. But the upside to all of that is I finally had the opportunity to binge watch Jessica Jones, which I'd never seen before, but I'd meant to. And everyone told me, yada, yada, I had to see it. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's a great show. I love Jessica Jones.
Okay, so you've seen it too? No spoilers. I'm only halfway through.
Yeah, I watched it pretty much right after it came out. I binged it all pretty quickly. I was excited for them to do another Marvel show on Netflix, but especially excited for something based on Alias. I love Bendis. I love the character. I love the idea of a superhero that's, you know, lives more like a normal person.
So I'd never heard of Jessica Jones before. This is like an established character.
Yeah. So Bendis, Brian Michael Bendis invented it, her in the early 2000s sometime.
Okay.
Before he did his run on Daredevil. But yeah, so he, Alias is the name of the series that she was in.
Wait, hold on. We're not talking about like the Alias TV series, right?
No, but that's why this is called Jessica Jones instead of Alias, I'm sure.
Oh, interesting. To make sure it doesn't, so people don't get confused.
Yeah, I think the comic was first, but I'm not certain. They actually were around the same time, but totally unrelated.
Interesting.
Other than the fact that I forget her name now, that played Alias, was in the Daredevil movie. That's the only way in which they're related.
Oh, is that their way of saying that it's actually the same thing? Crossovers. Very cool. Yeah, I mean, it's been pretty dark, right? I didn't watch it for a while because I heard it was like super dark. And it's pretty dark, but it's not like gross or anything like that. I heard it was like gross and disturbing. It's just been really interesting.
I think it's less dark than, you know, a lot of the DC movies right now.
Yeah.
But I think it's dark in a realistic way, if that makes sense. But I was just really excited to see a show like that focused on a female character and one that's, you know, empowered in an interesting way, both literally and figuratively. And a show that, like so many great TV shows these days, has a story that involves violence against women, but not in a way that's just for just to have something for the male hero to be angry about or to save his love interest from. You know, it's not about that kind of thing at all. The trauma she goes through isn't what makes her a hero. It doesn't make her who she is. It's just another part of her past that she's, you know, dealing with like a normal person.
A normal person that likes alcohol and punching things.
Yeah, you know, it has all those like fun comic book elements too, but I feel like it's just such, even though it's a fantasy story, it's one of the most real feeling stories.
Because in a lot of stories that have like fantasy elements, like superpowers and stuff like that, it's kind of like all this sort of stuff. But this sounds like a story like this could happen if someone had these superpowers. Like, this is probably what they'd do. And in some ways it's terrible, and in other characters it's awesome what they do with it. But people are terrible and awesome. They would do both of those things.
Yeah, and just because you have superpowers doesn't mean you also don't have to worry about paying rent and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Or fixing really your front door.
All right, so what are you happy about this week? You can also say Jessica Jones if you want. I won't complain.
I'm happy to get to talk about it. and also just talking about stuff in general on a podcast. I love podcasting. I love listening to podcasts. So I'm happy to be doing something related to that. But then also we're podcasting on the eve of the release of Mean Streets of Gadget Zan. So excited about that release in general, but specifically some of the great control tools that Priest is going to get.
Yeah, it looks really exciting. I mean, so I'm really excited for like the next 3 months or so for Priest, because Priest is getting awesome tools now, partially to compensate, I think, for everything they're going to be losing, especially in the Dragon subtype next year when stuff cycles out of standard. So I think they have like tons of tools now because they're preparing for how it's going to need to be. But right now we have both. We have the best of both worlds. I'm super excited. So actually, I don't want to talk about Mean Streets of Gadget. The next episode of the show, in about 2 weeks, we're going to do our review of the set like we always do, but we're adding some extra twists this time. We'll talk about it next episode. But you'll get more opinions and more info and more stuff that you can dig through if you want to. All right, so Jarrett, if you had to pick 3 cards that you're going to predict are going to be the best cards in the set, like the cards that just go in every deck that, you know, make sense for it, what are they going to be?
As I was just saying, Priest is getting some good control tools. One of the best ones, I think, is Dragonfire Potion.
Yeah. Light Bomb 2.0, but for dragons.
Yeah, and honestly, I think you don't have to play Dragon Priest for this card. Light Bomb was great in Control Priest and really made that a viable deck, and I think Dragonfire Potion is going to help with that too, and in some ways maybe actually even be better, such as getting a Thunderbluff Valiant on turn 6.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, I'm interested to see how it shakes up, because on paper I don't think it's as good as Light Bomb, but maybe in the current meta, like you're kind of saying, maybe it can actually be better. I'll be interested in that one. What else you got?
All right, Small Time Recruits. That's the 3-mana card for Paladin that draws 3 1-mana minions. Part of the reason this card is so good is that, like Secret Paladin was really good at, this allows you to thin out your deck and draw cards on curve better, which is going to help the midpoint of the game and later in the game if it goes that long.
Yeah, this was actually the card that I walked away from BlizzCon. Like, they had like little test stations where you could play with the cards. This was the card I walked away most impressed with for that exact reason, because I didn't really think about it ahead of time, but on turn 3 you're like, let's get rid of all those pesky one cost cards so I never draw them. And wow, that's actually extremely powerful for the rest of the game. Yeah, it seems like this could be one of those cards that you don't necessarily see the impact every time you play it, but you'll see your win rate get higher with it.
Yeah, I think it's the kind of card that, a really great player, really great deck builder is going to be able to build a top-tier deck around.
Yeah. All right, what's your third one?
Mistress of Mixtures. This is kind
Her
of...
Her acronym is MOM. Kind of nice.
You're right. That makes me think of Futurama.
Yes. Oh, no. Evil robot mom.
So, like Dragonfire Potion, this is kind of another almost reprint of a older card that was good for control. Although Zombie Chow got played in some mid-range decks, too. And I think in those situations, Mistress of Mixtures might actually be better because the healing is a battle cry. It can also heal you, or it does heal you if you've taken damage. But one of the problems, or I don't know if it's it wasn't a big problem, but one of the drawbacks of Zombie Chow is if you were playing against a slow deck, you might start, chipping away at their health, but then, you have to give it back at some point when Zombie Chow dies. But with this card, that's not a downside. So it might actually be a little bit better. I don't know how much difference the 2 versus 3 health makes, but we'll see.
Yeah, I'm interested in this one too. I'm with you. I think it's going to be better. I don't think the 3 health is going to be a big deal. So, I mean, almost anything that could kill it at 2 could kill it at 3, like Fiery War Axes or, Frost Novas or whatever. And I think most of the time it's going to trade into 2/3s anyways, ideally. It'll be interesting. All right, I got my 3. Are you ready for them?
Hit me.
ready for the card. I'm not just going to tell you that it's good. I'm going to tell you it's the best. And it's going to get nerfed, and I'll tell you how it's going to get nerfed.
All right, let's go.
We're making predictions. So if we're making predictions, I want crazy predictions. So if I get it right, I'm going to look awesome. And if not, everyone will forget. All right, Getaway Kodo. This is the Paladin Secret, one cost. This is redemption, but better. Right now it says, when a friendly minion is destroyed, return it to your hand. I think that is just way too good. Because Redemption's weakness is it gave it one health, and you didn't get Battle Cry effects or that sort of thing. I think this card is going to be bonkers, and the fact that it's at one cost because it's a Paladin means it's going to be so easy to combo with very specific cards so you know what's going to proc it. This card is just going to be so good in constructed decks. I think they're going to end up nerfing it so that it's not when the minion is destroyed, it's whenever the minion is damaged at all. So it's going to actually be kind of more of a downside that they could just ping it and get it off the board real fast. Because I think it's going to be too good as is. All right, next one. Devolve, the Shaman spell. I think it's just going to go in every Shaman deck. It's just so good at disrupting the enemy plans. They're picking the best minions and minions that synergize and stuff. And you're just going to be like, nah, I'm going to turn them into crappy kobolds or something. Potion of Madness as well. This has got to be one of the priest control cards you're thinking about, right?
Yeah, definitely, especially combined with imp-sized potion, is that right?
Oh, yeah, the one that reduces all enemy attacks by 3 for the turn.
Yep.
Yeah, so Potion of Madness, one cost, take control of an enemy minion for 2 for one turn. So it's like Shadow Madness, but it costs 2 less, and it's just one attack lower. I think there's going to be tons of use for this. First of all, just to make sure aggro never becomes a thing. And also just like you're saying with comboing that to steal stuff like Sylvanas, obviously is the first thing I thought of, and just all those sorts of death rattles that you can steal that will be glorious. All right. So you have 2 other honorable mentions here before we move on. Do you want to get those just on the record so you can claim victory when they're awesome?
Yeah. I think Dirty Rat is a great tool for Resurrect Priest. And could also be played in some mill and fatigue decks.
That's like, the one that plays something from their hand, or how does that work?
Yeah, it's a 2-mana 2/6 with taunt. Its battle cry is summon a random minion from your opponent's deck. So it's kind of an anti-aggro card.
Which, I think it's from their hand, though, not their deck.
Oh, you may be right. Which is actually better because yeah. You play it early in the game, so they were probably going to have cheaper minions. So that's actually better than. Yeah. Then Death Lord, which could occasionally pull a Tyrion or something like that.
Yeah, and I mean, occasionally they could have no minions. I mean, it could just totally whiff for them.
Yeah, good point, good point. They could have weapons, spells, secrets, lots of different cards that yeah. would cause that to happen. I hadn't even thought about it being that good, so it's actually even better than I thought.
I'm talking you up on it. Awesome. So this is how I get Scott into to give cards 5s that I want. I just keep telling him like, oh, imagine what if this happened. Oh, this could even happen.
Yeah, I mean, the two attack isn't great, but that's all Deathlord had too, and that was a killer card for Priest and some other control type decks. The other one that I think some people might be underrating is Grime Street Protector. It's a 7-drop for Paladin, which is not a part of the curve that's very contentious right now. There's not a lot of other great options. He's got Taunt. He gives 2 other minions Divine Shield if you've got him on the board. Placement matters, which I think is always great in Hearthstone. But yeah, if you can get a Grime Street turn 7, Tyrion turn 8, I really don't know many decks that could come back from that if you can get to that point and have a little bit any of a board at all on turn 7.
All right, awesome. So before we move on to the deck battle, I have to take a moment to brag as well. Not for me, but for David. He's been on the show a couple times, twice now, maybe just once. I can't remember. I think twice. He's also a host on Hearthstone Power. So he sent in his submission for our predictions episode. He's one of the very first people to do it. And I just totally missed it. I have no excuse. It was just really dumb of me. I was bad. I got everyone else's except for David's. And David was the one who guessed right. So we'll play the audio right now so you can listen to it.
Hey everyone, this is David, aka Hearthstone Power. It's been a long time since I've seen you guys. I was on episode 22 of the Happy Hearthstone podcast at the end of 2013, before Naxxramas, before we had adventures and expansions, and gosh, what a long time ago, and how far the game has come since then. It's pretty amazing. Anyway, the topic on everyone's mind, I'm sure, is next weekend is BlizzCon, and I will be there. I'm very excited and looking forward to it, but obviously everything is pointing to the gadgets and theme, but I'm interested more specifically in maybe a new game mechanic. What if they were to do something cool with the coin? I don't know about you guys, but when I think of goblins, I definitely think of money, and I would love to see them do something with that. Obviously, the rogues can already take advantage of that with cards like the Gadgets and Auctioneer to draw extra cards, but I would just love to see something a little bit deeper with the coin, because it is such an integral part of the game. What do you guys think? Anyway, I'll see you guys at BlizzCon. If you want to catch me while I'm there, tweet me at HearthPower and come say hello. Talk to you guys later.
All right, so there you go. He predicted the counterfeit coin. So he didn't predict it, you know, word for word exactly, but that's not what predictions are for. He is talking about wanting to do more with the coin, that rogues could do something really cool with it. So I don't know. I think he nailed it here. So what do you think about counterfeit coin as a card? It wasn't on your list of best cards. Do you think it's going to be a good card?
I think it has a lot of potential. It's obviously in the right class. You know, Miracle, Rogue, Combos, all these different kind of things. I really am interested to see what else comes along for Rogue next year that might work even better with this. But yeah, it definitely has potential.
Yeah, I'm interested too. It definitely seems like one of those cards that someone's going to find fun things to do with. And just the fact that you could have three coins in your starting hand or something like that. What could you do? It's like a really poor man's Innervate. Alright, let's get into our deck battle. Are you ready to fight? You want to fight me, Jared?
Let's do it.
Because I'm warning you now. I come with the full fury of three Hall of Fame decks. Are you scared?
It's a little intimidating, yeah, I have to admit.
Alright, be honest. Would you rather face this gauntlet or the Dragon Priest deck three times in a row?
You know, that's a good question. I think the Gauntlet, just because I think I actually have a better chance against the other two decks than Dragon Priest.
Ooh, trash talking the other two decks. It's messed up.
It's not about the quality of the decks. It's just the actual matchup.
I know. I was just messing with you. I was gonna give you a hard time no matter which way you answered. All right. So just to remind people what these deck battles are, because we haven't had them in a while. We do these deck battle episodes usually about once a month. Obviously, BlizzCon threw things for a loop, and then my travel plans for Thanksgiving. But how these works is the guest host brings on their favorite deck, and they break it down for you. They tell you what cards are in it, how it works, why they like playing it, all that stuff. And then we do a best of three battle against me, live on the show. And of course, the twist is I'm always using the current reigning champion deck of the show, which is the last deck a guest host brought onto the show and won with. But this week, Jared has to fight through the gauntlet because Craig's Dragon Priest deck made it into the Hall of Fame last episode, which means the throne is empty. There's no one sitting on the throne. So we have three Hall of Fame decks, Dan Patrice's Beastmaster Hunter, Andrew Brown's Warlock Demon Zoo deck, and then Craig's Dragon Priest. So in this episode, what's going to happen is Jared's going to have to play one match against each of those decks. And since there's only three so far, we're going to do a best of three series. If he wins that series, he's going to go on the throne, and he gets one win counted towards the three he needs to enter the Hall of Fame himself. But if he loses it, he still goes on the throne because someone's got to sit on that throne. But then he must win three more deck battles after this before he can get to the Hall of Fame. Does that sound good? I always feel like it's super confusing. Does it make sense?
Yeah, I mean, Hearthstone's, you know, challenge versions, you know, tournaments and stuff, there's always a little bit of complexity to it.
Yeah.
And this is as viable as any of those versions of Hearthstone.
There you go. Happy Hearthstone, we're viable. That's our new slogan.
You should submit this to Team 5 as a possible way to do tournaments.
Yeah, there you go. Only if we get to call it the Happy Hearthstone format, and if they construct a real life throne, whoever is winning currently gets to sit on that throne 24/7 till they're kicked off. which could take months. So you're going to have to sit on that throne forever. Are you up for that, Jared?
Yeah, I think they should just do that anyways.
That's true.
Regardless of any of the formats.
Maybe we could just get like a crown. So you could do your thing, but you're just wearing this sweet crown the whole time.
Yeah, definitely. Mana crystals in it.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be cool. Like, maybe put some red mana crystals in there.
Yeah, you know, I think more sports and competitive things should have, you know, belts like in wrestling. So maybe this will be Hearthstone's version of that, the crown.
Yeah, I'm down with that. Let's make it happen. All right. So if you like what you hear about this deck, obviously we're going to talk about it. If you like it, Jared has put together a full guide for it. It's awesome. All the cards, substitute suggestions, a bunch of advice, all that's on GameTipMat.com. So we're going to go through the deck, and then we'll talk about some advice and specific cards in a little bit. Does that sound good, Jared?
Sounds great.
All right. So why don't you tell us just what's the core theme of the deck? What is the name of it?
So this is what we're calling the Futurist Tempo Mage deck.
Ooh. Is it from the future?
In a way it is. So the concept behind this deck is to take the archetype of tempo with the class of mage, which has been an effective combination, as far as I know, since the beginning of Hearthstone.
It didn't really get huge. Mage was more controller freezy until mech mages showed up. And then people were like, hey, we could do tempo. This works good too.
Yeah, and mech mage.
Mana Worm was another key part.
Mech Mage was a variation on tempo for sure. Yeah. Of course, that's no longer viable in standard. But yeah, as you said, Mana Worm is a key to that archetype for Mage as well. But the concept is to take that class and archetype combination and look at what it might be for next year's standard after the first release of 2017. So it's built using only cards that will still be playable once standard flips over to the next year, whatever that will be after the year of the Kraken.
Okay. See, I love this idea when you pitched it to me. I thought it was so cool because a lot of times we're living in the here and now, but I think it's cool to start planning for the future. So if you could have a deck that's ready to go on day one when it switches over, and just, I think it's a good just kind of thought process to start thinking through, like, okay, how can I survive without these cards that I've kind of grown to rely on? I'm really excited about this.
Yeah, and I think so much Hearthstone content, podcasts, videos, articles, whatever, in a few months, it's almost irrelevant. So I think, you know, not that I'm an expert, you know, I didn't invent Tempo Mage. It's well practiced, well built, you know, and refined deck over years. But I think, you know, this look at it is something that's going to be something that people can, if they come back to this episode, you know, months and months down the line, it'll still be relevant, I hope.
Yeah, I hope so too. All right, so I noticed in your sideboard, you only put, like, I think 2 Mean Streets of Gadgetzan cards in there. Do you just not think there's much there for Tempo Mage, or you didn't want to guess until you actually got to play with them?
I think Team 5 knows what decks are powerful right now, and I think they purposely don't fuel those decks that they think are too powerful or could be too powerful. Especially ones that have a lot of RNG like Tempo Mage does right now in standard meta. So yeah. I think they purposely avoided giving it tools. Do think there's the potential for a really secret heavy, version of Tempo Mage. But it's not quite there yet.
Okay, cool. I just wanted to check there because I was kind of surprised. I expected more, but when you say it like that and kind of when I look through the mage cards, I totally get that.
Yeah, there's also, you can kind of just flip it and do the version that uses the, I can't remember if it's actually called Frost Collar, but it's basically Flame Collar, but it freezes opposing characters. The problem with that card in Tempo is that it's really anti-Tempo, because it costs more than Flame Waker, and its effect, I don't know if it's less powerful, It's definitely less powerful for the mana that it costs. And it doesn't really work in tempo, at least not right now, maybe with some more cards.
Okay. All right, so Tempo Mage, I mean, is this deck winning just like all Tempo Mage decks do? Whittle down threats and then throw fireballs to the face? Is that the idea?
Basically, that's definitely one of the win conditions, especially in the type of decks that I'll be battling today. I think that's probably the winning win condition.
All right, what are some of the other ways it wins?
So there's Ragnaros. You know, he's not in himself a win condition, but if you've controlled the board, if you've managed to chip away at your opponent's health, he can be. You know, if he survives and you can keep control of the board, that's 16 damage over two turns, which is sometimes enough to win. There's also Durun Archmage Antonidas, which, if you don't remember, is the classic mage legendary that I know this is one of. I started to call him Josh. Your preferred co-host.
Scott?
Yeah, I know that's one of his. Seems to be one of his favorite cards. He mentions it a lot, but. You know, you use cheap spells or bad random spells that you get off other cards and turn them into fireballs. And especially in control matchups, that is probably the win condition.
Yeah. That gets scary, man. When it's like Arcane Missile. No, he now has like 30 damage in his hand. I'm dead.
And if you can't kill Archmage, he's just going to keep making burn.
Yeah. Forever and ever, two every single turn.
The other low-key win condition that people probably don't think about as a win condition is Mana Worm. I've actually had games that snowballed so quickly out of control in my favor that Mana Worm actually ended up killing my opponent.
Wow.
If you get some good spells, you get a Sorcerer's Apprentice on board early on, and they can't kill your Mana Worm in the first few turns for, you know, if the deck's just too slow or they get a bad hand or whatever, you know, you can get a Mana Worm up to 6-7 attack in just a few turns.
Yeah. So let's talk about those key cards. So Mana Worm, it sounds like, is one of them.
Yeah, definitely. It's a one drop, and it's probably the best one drop, class one drop, in the classic and basic set. You know, it can.
That. It's scary. You feel like, as the opponent, you feel like you have to remove it or else you're dead.
And that's exactly what you want in tempo. You want minions that you put out to require your opponent's attention so that, you know, they either have to make inefficient trades or they waste cards that they might actually need to use to kill you. And that's exactly why Mana Worm is so great. Right from the beginning of the game, you make your opponent react to what you're doing and make difficult decisions. And yeah, like I said, it can get out of control. It can trade up much higher up than some other one drops. It can survive trades early in the game.
Yeah. And you mentioned Sorcerer's Apprentice, which is like the best friend of the Mana Worm, right?
Right. Similarly, Sorcerer's Apprentice is one of the best class two drops in the classic set. Again, might be the best one, but it's definitely up there. So that's the 3/2 that makes your spells all cost one less. This is good for some combos on its own. You know, if you get it on turn three, you can, you know, put it on the board, frostbolt something, and flip the board. Yeah. If you've already got a Mana Worm, you know, then you're buffing it for cheaper. You play it on turn two, you can play your Arcane Intellect to cycle and then maybe play something else that you get. Have a mana left over to play something that might also be cheaper. Just a lot of good uses. You can combo it with Antonidas. Yeah, it's just a really effective card. All right,
let me ask you a question.
Sure.
Because I don't play Tempo Mage very much. I'm but I play against it a lot, obviously, because it's very popular. I always wonder, so say that just an average game, you have Mana Worm on board, it's a 2-3, and a Sorcerer's Apprentice, a 3-2. Which one of these, if I have a spell that's going to kill one of them, which one are you hoping I don't kill?
That's a great question, Josh.
I know, because I never know, like do I get rid of the Mana Worm because the damage, but Sorcerer's Apprentice is so much trickery?
Yeah, and you're pointing out what makes Tempo Mage so effective is that you, as the opponent, have to make that decision. You know, it depends on the matchup. That's kind of a cop-out, but that's the honest answer.
All right, how about Priest and Warrior? Which ones?
Well, with Priest, I'm probably hoping that you kill the Sorcerer's Apprentice because the matchup's probably going to be slow enough that I can, you know, float a little mana here and there or be a little bit slower.
Yeah.
You know, if you're specifically talking about Dragon Priest, I think that's still the answer, partially because that big Mana Worm is going to come in handy to clear whatever fat-legged dragon you throw down. You know,
that's fair.
Kill that Twilight Guardian with 6 health. You know, a spell and a Mana Worm can do that.
Yeah.
You said what was the other matchup?
Warrior.
With Warrior, I don't know if it matters as much. Again, it's probably Sorcerer's Apprentice just because I can potentially do more damage with the Mana Worm.
Okay.
And Warrior is a bad matchup because he can absorb so much burn.
Yeah. All right. I'm making a note right now. It's in all caps. It says, always kill Mana Worm.
Or maybe I'm just using reverse psychology.
Oh, no. Would you do that? Would you sabotage me like that? All right, how about this? You don't have to tell me now, but after our deck battle, because since this was kind of, I didn't intentionally do this to scout for our deck battle, but you are giving me tips. After the deck battle, you tell me if you were lying to me, because I don't want to go through my whole life killing Mana Worms, and somewhere off in the distance, you're just cackling evilly with your mage buddies, sitting there probably throwing frost bolts at the ceiling laughing. Not going to happen. All right, so you got two other key cards here, and they're both spells.
Right.
What are they?
And we've talked about them both already. Frostbolt. Frostbolt is powerful because it's only 2 mana. It's powerful because it does 3 damage for 2 mana. It's powerful because it also freezes whatever it hits. So it's one of the most versatile spells in the game. You can, you know, hold off big minions that you can't quite kill yet. Maybe you need to ping them next turn to kill them or whatever. You can combine them with a fireball to finish off your opponent. If you really need to slow down a weapon class to, you know, kind of keep board control or whatever you need to do, it can do that in a pinch. You know, it's just if you get a crappy shatter off your babbling book, you can at least kill something with it now, or even play it. I mean, you can't even play shatter if nothing's frozen, so it's just, you know, it's one of the best cards in the game.
Yeah, I won't argue with you there.
It's one of those cards that I almost wonder if at some point it'll get nerfed, because I know Blizzard keeps saying that they don't like cards that are in every single deck, and that's a card that's in every single mage deck, but I don't know what they would do to it.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if that's just one of those cards they move to wild and they start printing like variants of it that sometimes don't have the freeze or sometimes cost a little more or something like that. There's actually got to be a lot of mage cards that are in every deck. I bet every mage deck has like 2 fireballs, 2 mana worms, 2 frost bolts, 2 flame wakers.
I actually don't know that there's any other card where that's the case. There's some variations of freeze mage that don't run fireball because they use forgotten torches just to create fireballs.
Okay.
And they run Antonidas anyways, so they don't need fireballs already. I don't know that that's the standard version of Freege Mage now, but it was for a little while earlier this year.
Okay.
So I don't know that there's, you know, Freeze Mage doesn't care about minions, so that don't cycle at least, so it doesn't run a lot of the tempo mage minions. Most Freeze Mages don't even run Sorcerer's Apprentice, so I don't know that there's another mage card.
Okay,
that's
just Frostbolt. All right. Well, there you go. Would you say it's the best card in the game?
I would not.
In the classic set.
I would not say it's the best card in the game.
Okay.
But you could definitely make an argument for it.
All right. So before we get into our duel, so it's almost dueling time. I can only contain my feistiness for so long over here. but because this is a futurist tempo mage deck, it's missing some cards that are pretty key in modern or current tempo mage decks. So can you talk about just like what's the strategy? How does it work here based on the cards that you've changed in this?
Yeah, so it's definitely a lot harder to win with, and it's not as forgiving of mistakes, and you can't come back from behind as well, mostly because you don't have Flame Waker. There's a few other tools that are currently in standard that help that. So, but it's still the same basic idea. You want to, you know, use as much of your mana every time turn as you can to do effective things that are gonna make your opponent do things that aren't as effective and just exhaust their resources and whittle them down and, you know, finish them off in one of those ways that we mentioned before.
A couple specific notes you have here though is like, since Flame Waker is gone, you say holding spells is less valuable. You don't actually want to hold on to them and wait for Antonidas, even though he's in the deck. You just want to play him.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. gotcha. Yeah, so in the current version of Tempo Mage, you know, a lot of times it's sometimes smart to hold a spell just to use it with Flame Waker. But for this deck, you know, that's not going to happen. So, and if you hold
he's
them,
never going to come.
Right. And if you hold them to use with Antonidas, unless you just absolutely don't need that spell right then, you're probably hurting yourself because you're going to get too far behind. And it won't matter that Antonidas comes out.
Yeah. Because it's even though Antonidas is there, it's not a late game deck. You want the pressure early.
Right. And in the current meta, I don't even run Antonidas because he's such a late game card.
Yeah. But, I mean, it also seems like, and since this is a futurist tempo mage deck, we're looking in the future, it definitely looks like Blizzard's trying to slow the game down, even just in Mean Streets. It looks like the meta is going to slow down a lot. So that Antonidas, even in 12 hours or whenever Mean Streets comes out, is going to be viable.
Yeah, I think so. That's the way they want it to go, at least. I mean, Shaman's still going to be strong. Even next year, so you know, we'll see if those slower decks can survive long enough. But with some of the AoE and buffing cards and stuff, they want the game to slow down. So if it does, Antonidas is your boy. So talking about Shaman still being strong in that matchup and some matchups like that, it's might be smart to hold on to your Flame Strike maybe one more turn than you feel like you're comfortable with.
Because current Temple Mages don't always run Flame Strike, do they?
No, I only run one right now, I think. For a while, they weren't running any. But I think most are running at least one now, just because Shaman is so ridiculous. But some run some other burn cards instead. Such as the what this other same 7 mana spell, the one that does 5 damage and summons a minion.
You're actually running 2 copies of Flame Strike in this version, though, aren't you?
Right, right. So on the ladder right now, I just run 1, but on this one, I run 2, just because there's room for it without all those other cards. And like I said, I expect Shaman to continue to wreck shop for the coming year.
Okay. Any other strategy tips before we go into the duel?
You know, it's not an aggro deck, but you need to be thinking about your path to lethal early on. I mean, that's true for most decks, but it's especially true here. because if you make the mistake of playing a fireball to kill a minion when it was your only way to win, then you're just wasting your time, just making your inevitable death, you know, a little later in the game. Disguised Toast actually did a really great video recently about some decisions that were made at the HTC, I think I said that right, the World Championship at BlizzCon. And one of the things he talked about was a decision a player made to fireball face on his opponent when that wasn't the obvious play, and that actually won him the game. So that's a good video to watch for what I'm talking about there. And, you know, this is a deck. We're going to battle with it, but honestly, it's really just a shell. You know, experiment with some of those new secret cards and Gadgetzan, experiment with the one mana arcane, I can't remember its last name, the one that gets more health as you cast spells. You know, there are a lot of ways to shape this deck, so I wouldn't necessarily take this exact deck and run it on the ladder, but, you know, put your own spin on it or look at some other examples of ways people run Tempo Mage, both now and in the future.
That's what I'm most excited about with this deck, because it is looking towards the future. And we're on the eve of a new expansion, and the thing that always happens is cards come out and surprise us with which ones are more powerful and which ones are less powerful and that sort of stuff. I mean, this is the sort of thing where you take this deck and you go like, oh, this certain mage card is way more powerful than we thought it would be. Awesome. Let's toss it in here. Because this, like you said, I love thinking of this as like a shell of a deck. And so you look at it and be like, okay, what are the core things you can't get rid of? Okay, great. But things like maybe one copy of Mirror Image or something, I don't know. I'm just picking random things off your list here. But the things that are more flexible, like the second Flame Strike, maybe you can replace with whatever the new hotness is in Mean Streets and just try it out.
Yeah, definitely. That's the idea.
Cool. Oh, actually, you have a list of current substitutions right here. Oh, these are for if you want to play the current meta version.
Right, if you're listening to this podcast the day it comes out and for whatever reason you've never played Tempo Mage before, there are definitely certain cards that you'll want to use if you have them. You know, we've mentioned Flame Waker several times, but there's also Arcane Blast, which is the one mana, two damage spell that gets bonus spell damage. That card is amazing on the ladder right now. It combos with a lot of other cards in the deck. If you're playing a little slower or combo-y version of it, Emperor Thorison is good. And actually, I've even experimented a little bit with running Argent Horse Rider as a 3-drop just because it's strong against Shaman, purely for that reason.
Okay, yeah. Nice. All right. So, any final words before you enter the gauntlet in case you don't emerge?
Well, I specifically teched this version of the deck just a little bit to match up better against the decks that you're playing. So we'll see if that pays off.
Cool. So as a reminder, I'm doing the three decks in the Hall of Fame. Dan's Beastmaster Hunter, which is funny. Funnily enough, is actually a standard deck because it was made before any expansion, so all the cards are classic cards. And then Andrew Brown's Demon Warlock deck, which is one of the all-time favorites on this show. That's the one people talk about that love so much. Oh, the Demon Zoo. Sorry. I don't know if I mentioned it was Zoo. And that one is wild. And then the Dragon Priest deck from Craig, which is standard. So I'll have links to all three of those decks if you want to check them out in the show notes. There's also a Happy Hearthstone deck battle page now that lists every single deck battle and the Hall of Fame winners. So if you ever get a hankering for some fighting, you can go there and watch all that. All that's on GameDiplomat.com, which also will have the live stream of the deck battle we're about to do. So you can go watch that, and we'll be right back. All right, we're back. Welcome to the throne, Jarrett. You're sitting proud on top with 3-0 win. That was pretty dominant.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Yeah, I think got a lot of good draws. A lot of things went my way.
Yeah, I mean, you're not sounding very excited right now, Jared. Are you? Has the weight of this moment not sunk in yet? Is that what it is?
Do you want me to be honest?
Yeah, be honest.
I'm actually, now I feel defeated. We just recorded this already, and I forgot to hit record, and we're having to do it again. You're sick. I feel really bad. Like, yeah, all my pride, my overconfidence has all been eaten away by my mistakes in real life.
Jared, you don't focus on that. Just focus on how badly you beat all the Hall of Fame decks, and take pleasure in that.
Yeah, that did feel really good. I did really enjoy that. I was overconfident even after the first win.
Yeah, I mean, so, all right, so I played the Hall of Fame decks in the order that they came out, because that seemed like the right thing to do. So the first one, the Beastmaster Hunter deck, how'd you feel during that game? How did it go?
I think the key there was I decided to keep a Polymorph that I got in my opening hand, specifically for Savannah Highmane. You played Highmane on curve. I threw down Polymorph and also got to ping away the Beast Sheep, which is important versus a Hunter, and I think that was the key to that matchup.
Yeah, I do too. I had a pretty bad hand in that deck to start off with. And so when I got Savannah Highman, I was like, yes, this is my key out. This is going to save me. And then Polymorph instantly just, oh, no, he was my hope. I put all my faith in him. It hurt.
Yeah, you had two weapons early on, I think. And I was able to slow you down with the weapon with Water Elemental, and that made the other weapon just sit in your hand longer.
Yeah, it was especially painful because I had two kill commands in hand too, but it's like the 6 health on that Water Elemental is so obnoxious because it's like, oh, do I use a kill command? It's not going to kill it anyways. And so it's always just like one damage short of freeing me from it, and I couldn't commit both kill commands to it. It was just too much.
Yeah, and I think you made the right decision. I think one thing we've learned in Hearthstone in 2016 is 6 health on a minion, pretty good.
Pretty good, yeah. No joke. 6 health is the new 4 health. Because back when like Spider Tank and stuff came out, people were like, what? 4 health? This is so good. Mm. But now you can have 6. All right, so let's see. I've tried to think of other big moments that happened. Oh, that was the game that ended where you threw some burn at me, I threw some burn at you. But that I ran out of gas. Like, I threw all my burn at you, and you were still at, like, 10 or something, and I had nothing left.
Yeah, you got me down low, but I had made the decision to actually start burning you earlier on when I had the extra mana so that later, you know, I wouldn't have to, you know, I could have your health be lower, potentially making you make harder decisions, but then also, you know, I wouldn't end up with burn cards that I couldn't play all on one turn.
Yeah. All right. The second game we did, Warlock Demon Zoo, I was feeling really good about that deck. So let's just get the ending out of the way because it hurts. I forgot to look at the deck list ahead of time. So I haven't played this deck in a long time. It's one of my favorites, right? I totally forgot Dr. Boom was a thing. And so when I drew it, I think we were already past turn 10 or something. So I had a bunch of mana. I drew it and I was like, what? This is amazing. Dr. Boom, I'm going to win, right? Because Dr. Boom's just so good. So I threw it on the board. I got way too excited. And I was like, we're going all in. Let's just kill him. So I played with a Flame Imp and I Hero Powered.
Yeah.
And right after I did it, I was like, wait a second. What's my 13 health? Didn't I see him earlier get 2 fireballs off of Antonitis? Right? Oh, yeah. No. What have I done?
Yeah, I BM'd there because you had to know I had fireballs because I had Antonitis earlier and cast some spells. But, you know, I got caught in the same thing. You threw down Dr. Boom, and I'm thinking, like, okay, I'm going to have to use one of these fireballs to clear him. Do I, you know, then what do I do about the bomb? And then I'm watching you kill yourself as I'm thinking about this, and I'm like, wait, he's dead.
Yeah, that was unfortunate. Dr. Boom got the better of me. It was exciting to see him again, though. I totally forgot he was a thing.
Yeah, and definitely.
Top decking him still felt great. That moment when you're just like, oh, I need a good card. I need a good card. Oh, there's Dr. Boom. I have a chance.
Well, and speaking of top deck, I mean, the top deck I had that even set up you being able to play Dr. Boom in a good situation was you had a pretty much full board and I top decked a Flame Strike.
Yeah. Oh, that hurt. So during that play, I was totally thinking of at the tournament, the big Blizzard tournament that just happened. One of the things the Shoutcaster said that stuck with me was someone was in a similar situation. I can't remember who. But they had like the option to kind of flood the board or not. And the Shoutcaster, like talking through what they thought their thought process was, well, if my opponent has Flame Strike, I'm going to lose this game anyways. I can't beat them if they draw Flame Strike. So I might as well just play as if they don't have it. And so that's what I did. I was like, you know what? If it's good enough for the pros, it's good enough for me. So I threw my stuff down, did double Defender of Argus, and then watched it all burn.
Well, but, you know, like you said, I think you made the right decision. And even if you had held a Defender of Argus, I mean, what does that really do for you?
Yeah. Yeah. He just drops down by himself and is sad. Yeah. I will say, I had a lot of fun that game because I finally got to play my Golden Implosion again. And I forgot how fun that card is because the little imps just tilt their heads back and forth like they're like creepy dolls in a horror movie or something the whole time. And I got 4 off my first one. Implosion was just like, we loved you. We missed you. Have 4.
Right.
And so I got 4 of them again and they're all just tilting their heads slowly. It just feels... You were talking about intimidation tactics earlier, and that just... This feels like intimidation tactics. 4 little imps mocking you.
You know, I didn't even notice that it was golden. I was so busy.
Oh, come on!
I was trying
I guess it wasn't an intimidation tactic.
I was trying to think, what am I going to do now?
So how did the deck? How did your deck do in that game? Did you feel like you had a good starting hand? Was there anything like Polymorph that you held on to that paid off?
I had 2 Arcane Explosions early on. I don't think I drew them both right at the beginning, but getting those early on definitely made a difference. You know, the deck.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised at how strong those were. Are those one of the cards that you would suggest people sub out? Or is that part of like the core Futurist Tempo Mage, you think?
Well, as long as the current version of Shaman Zoo is Wrecking Shop, then at least 1 copy is good, especially if you're running a bunch of spell damage minions, like most people recommend. You know, 2 copies may be a little presumptuous, especially if buffing minions and control decks and stuff get as big as I think they might in this next expansion.
Mm-hmm. So what are some of the cards that you would kind of say, so because we talked about using this deck as like a skeleton, right? And people can, there are some cards you don't have to have that players can sub out, but like after our games I'm having a hard time guessing what those cards are that you would sub out, because all the cards seem to do pretty well. There weren't any cards that I was like, yeah, I can't believe he's running that one.
Yeah, and that just speaks to the quality of Mage's core set. You know, I think Barnes is definitely an option depending on what other cards you run. You know, if you run Harrison Jones, then Barnes gets a little bit worse, you know, things like that. You know, Polymorph, 2 copies of Polymorph is, you know, it might be great if a lot of big minions are popular, but, you know, same thing for 2 copies of Flame Strike. It really depends on the meta.
Yeah. I mean, so this was actually the deck or the match where I was really surprised that you had answers for Cro-Magus and Nefarian back to back without Polymorph. You had enough spells that you could kind of dismantle those threats, and I thought for sure one of those was going to stick.
Yeah, and that was partially a factor of the way that Mage can cycle and cycle creatively, for lack of a better word, you know, Kabbalist tome, I guess is actually how you say it, you know, babbling book, things like that allow you to pull cards that you might not even have in your deck. And in this case, really paid off because we were playing in wild mode. So in some situations I got cards that were probably better than I would get actually playing this deck in standard right now.
Oh yeah, that's fair. But hey, you're playing against Dr. Boom. You should have a chance to draw those wild spells.
and Haunted Creeper, which actually kind of tilted me more than Dr. Boom.
He's never leaving the board.
Right. That was actually one. That was an interesting decision I had to make because you had a board full of imps, some other 1/1, and a Haunted Creeper. I was going to play Azure Drake in Arcane Explosion. So I had to decide, which do I play first? Do I want to actually kill the creeper, or do I want to leave it up as a 1/1?
It's a tough call, man. That was the card Scott called right away in our review, that card was going to be great, and I did not believe him, and he was way right.
Oh, yeah. I said on my recording of the challenge, of the battle, you know, you're seeing right here how much better the Naxxramas cards are than almost anything that's been printed since then.
Yeah, it's true, man. That was a great deal because you paid like $10 or something for the whole adventure and you get all those cards, and almost all of them were good. It's crazy.
In quantity wise, it's probably the smallest release, I think, but I mean, just all the Death Rattle cards are just outrageously powerful.
I'd pay $10 for Sludge Belcher, straight up.
Right.
All right, so the last one. Oh, I guess the last... I forgot we hadn't already talked about this. So the last one is obviously where I played the Dragons, because that was the Dragon Priest deck. And that one, I got off to a slow start. It's unfortunate. It was one of those times, you know, just... You get it every now and then in Dragon decks, where you have all the Dragon activation cards, but no Dragons. So I had to pass my first... two turns, which against Tempo Mage, like right then I was like, this is not a good side.
Right, but especially considering I had Mana Worm, then Cult Sorcerer, so I threw down 1/2.
Yeah, it was scary. And once I drew a dragon, I had some good answers. I had a bunch of Taunt, right, that you had to deal with, but it seemed like you always had the spells to deal with it, and that's just kind of Tempo Mage's strength, right?
It is, and I made a couple decisions to make sure that things happen that way. You know, I got, you know, the right draws sometimes. Mm-hmm. You know, there was a situation where, you know, I played two spells to clear two minions, which may not be obviously the best thing, but against Priest, you know, I think you have to make inefficient trades like that.
Yeah. Hey, and I was surprised at just how much... I can't remember if it was that game or later. At some point, I looked down. I know it was in this game. I looked down, and I was at 10 health. And, like, for the life of me, I couldn't tell you how I got there. One of the games, you had the stupid little Sorcerer's Apprentice. Every single turn, I threw something down that was like, okay, this time he's going to have to trade it. And you just kept finding ways out of it. It was painful.
Right. That's part of what tempo is, you know, you make your opponent make the trades. You do the damage. You, you know, set up lethal. You calculate, you know, what's more valuable to make him trade that. And then, or, you know, if he doesn't trade, even better for me, because then I keep this minion and I keep that effect and things like that.
Yeah. All right. So any parting thoughts on the deck? Any other suggestions for cards people should try or look out for, things to watch for in the meta, anything?
I think the main thing about tempo and different types of tempo decks is, for a lot of people, myself included, it's a different play style. You know, I play a lot of control decks, sometimes mid-range, and I really, it took me a long time to learn things like fireballing a face is not always a bad thing on turn six.
yeah.
You know, I think I've said that already, basically. So I'm probably repeating myself, but I really think non-obvious choices are really important for this type of deck. But I'm also excited to see people, you know, come up with some different versions of it. Maybe lots of secrets, or maybe the Frost Tempo Mage does work. And I'm wrong, but so I'd love to see different versions of it.
Yeah, I would love to. If anyone plays around with the skeleton and kind of builds other versions, post a link in the comment sections of the site so we can see them all. Especially, you know, in 3 months when everyone needs to build new Temple Mage decks based on the skeleton, it'd be cool to come back and kind of have some ideas sitting there. Especially once you start tinkering around with Mean Streets Gadgetzan cards, which I'm sure you are by the time you listen to this, because it comes out in just a few hours. Start thinking about, okay, which one of these cards would fill a hole that Flamewaker left in Tempo Mage, if there are any. Although you kind of mentioned earlier, probably in Mean Streets, not so much.
Yeah, but I also think, you know, I challenge people to not think about it that way. Like, not, okay, what card does the same thing, but think, what, you know, combinations can I do instead? You know, is playing a couple secrets for free better than a bunch of pings?
Yeah. Yeah, I like it. Out of the box thinking. Cool. So congratulations, Jarrett. Your deck is now seated contentedly on the Happy Hearthstone throne. You're not in the Hall of Fame yet, though, so you don't get your crown quite yet.
Oh, man.
But the crown will come. You get one win since you just thoroughly demolished all of the Hall of Fame decks. And so you need two more wins, and then your deck gets in the Hall of Fame. Think you can do it?
You know, I'm a little worried about how powerful some of the decks that are actually built, you know, using all the cards available will be. But I also think that, you know, early on after Gadgetzan is released, people will be trying to have fun and try new things rather than make strong decks. So that could play to my advantage.
Yeah, I think so. And especially on our show, we don't usually just do like standard, you know, classic meta decks. Because if you want those decks, you can already find them everywhere else, and you'll find better versions of them everywhere else. So I really try and do like decks like this that have like an interesting twist that, like, hey, maybe this isn't a way that you've thought about Tempo Mage before. So I think we'll probably do at least the first one after, right? Because especially right after Mean Streets, we got to do an experimental one, like, I don't know, like the rat deck, or, you know, the weapon buffing deck. We just got to try some. Try to dive into these weird new strategies and see if one works.
Yeah, I look forward to listening to that episode. And I volunteer now to coach you to victory before that.
That's a deal. I will need coaching because Mage is not my favorite class to play. So I do not have nearly as much experience as I do in something like Priest. So I will need your training. We'll get a sweet like training montage going. You make music. You can make us a sweet montage song.
sure.
Yeah, it'll be our pump up. I'll wear like a tracksuit and a beanie, and we'll go punch trains or whatever it was Rocky did.
Punch trains.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm not Rocky. Don't judge me. Yeah. You're the trainer here. You tell me what to do.
Yeah, punch a train sounds good to me. Punch a train, pull a train.
I'll punch trains and then try really hard to throw fireballs at it with my mind and see if it works.
Race a train, just lots of things. Against. I like trains, so that's good.
All right, we'll find all sorts of training. Training, yep. Regiments.
Got it, got it.
All right. Jarrett, so congratulations again on your win. And beating through the gauntlet. I don't think anyone's made it through the gauntlet yet, unscathed. Oh, 3-0. That's awesome.
I feel pretty good about it.
Cool. Let's jump to the community. So my brother sent a question, and technically he just sent it to me the other day, but since I forgot to answer him, we're going to answer it here on the show.
Nice.
He asks, what Mean Streets card are you most excited to play? So I'll go first because I am super excited to play Knuckles, which is that Hunter Legendary. That's a 5-cost, 3/6, I think, gorilla with brass knuckles. It says after it attacks a minion, it also hits the enemy hero. So I don't think this card... Oh, it's a 3-7. Sorry, not a 3-6. I don't think this card is going to be incredible. I think it's going to be good. It's going to have some cool combos that are fun to pull off, especially with all the cards that buff things that are in your hand. I think it could be kind of a surprise fun card. And hey, it can get charge. I think it'll be fun.
Yeah, it's basically Cobra Shot as a minion.
Totally.
So it's an interesting design for sure.
Yeah, it's a really cool idea. And I haven't read enough to know this, but I'm assuming it says after this attacks a minion. So if it dies attacking a minion, it doesn't hit the hero, I'm assuming.
Oh, well, I don't know. I haven't even thought about that. I've been more focused on the fact that he's a gorilla and not an echidna.
You need that Sonic the Hedgehog reference?
Yeah, I mean, I think I just hang out on Reddit too much.
That's fair. Hanging out on Reddit for too long can have adverse effects on you.
Yeah, for example, the only other thing I can think is, why isn't he called Hammurabi?
See, you're channeling Reddit right now. Keep them coming. What else you got?
Yeah.
Complain about RNG.
Why isn't he a 4-mana 7-7?
Nice. That was good. Wow, you got another one?
Rogue sucks.
Okay, there you go. I love all the complaints about Rogue sucking before the expansion has even come out.
Well, that happens every time, though, right? There's always,
that's fair.
Why'd you give this class all these cards? Why'd you give this class nothing? You know, I do think all the complaints about the Blade Fury nerf, which was actually a double nerf, are legit, but you know, yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm excited to see Jade Golem's work. I think Rogues could make him work really well.
I'm anticipating cursing a lot of Jade Golem decks the same way I did a lot of C'Thun decks for weeks.
Yeah, I can see that. Because at some point, you're just going to hit a stage where it's like, okay, it's inevitable that they win. And it won't happen in all the games or maybe even the majority of games. It might be a bad thing. Or might not work well, but when it does, when they're dropping like 7-7 and 8-8s and you know there's 20 of them in their deck, you're just going to be like, okay, let's just hit this resign button and move on.
Yeah, and I don't like decks where the way you build it is control F a word or phrase and just click all those cards. I think encouraging that kind of deck building is the wrong way to go, but I'm going to stop now before I go on a long rant.
The one thing I will say is I think it's a great way to get people into deck building. It's like a beginner friendly way to deck build, right? Because a new player that comes in hasn't played any TCGs or anything. They'll come in and be like, build a good deck. How do I do that? I don't know. And you're like, well, you need to come up with a complex strategy and build all these cards around it and find the cards that work. But you could also just say, hey, search for Jade Golem, toss them all in the deck, see how that works. And then they could get the ideas, hopefully, and then they kind of move on to more advanced deck building. That's what I'm hoping, at least.
I think that's a great point, Josh. I could naysay it and counterpoint that, but I don't want to keep being negative.
All right. This is the Happy Hearthstone, buddy.
Right, right.
Good. All right.
This isn't Reddit.
Take your Harambe jokes and get out of here. All right. No iTunes reviews this week. If you want to leave a review, a 5-star review, we'll read it in future episodes. Let's jump to card of the week because you recorded a song and emailed it to me ahead of time. What is this?
So I didn't record this whole song specifically for this. This is actually an old song of mine when I first started Gurnoise as a music solo project, which it hasn't been a lot more recently. But when I was thinking about doing this for the show, I felt like that melody kind of worked. My stuff's always instrumental. I think you'll be able to tell why when you hear the song, but I try to throw enough effects on the vocals so that it doesn't sound horrible.
Hey, it sounded good when I listened to it. I checked it just to make sure there were no crazy profanities or horrible racist things in there, just to be safe. But let's go ahead and listen to it right now. Thank you. All right. And I guess I'll share. You made a card of the week, too. So we started doing card of the weeks where we make up cards, right? And we talk about them. So I made one, and then you made one to go with it. I'm super excited. So I'll say mine first. So I guess we have two cards of the week? This is unprecedented. We're treading new waters.
I didn't
waters
think
here
about that when I was recording.
Yeah, cards of the week.
I did say card of the week twice, so
that gets that's right. What it was. Well done. You knew. Deep in your heart, you knew. All right, so I always thought that rogues should have secrets. Like, thematically, it just makes sense that of all the classes, they should be the cards that are doing secretive stuff, or all the classes. So I wanted to come up with a design that would kind of combat the outcry about against RNG, because I designed this card probably like a month or two ago. So I came up with secrets. I thought they should be zero cost, because obviously zero cost cards are good for rogues. They like to combo. And I also thought it was interesting, kind of a design space, just to build spells that are so weak or like super conditional that they can work at zero cost and not be crazy imbalanced. I thought that was kind of fun. It was almost like spare parts, like designing spare parts, but with more stuff. So anyways, this is my favorite one of the bunch. Loaded dice, zero cost. When a target would be chosen randomly, you choose the target instead. What do you think?
I think there's a lot of engineering that would need to go into this kind of mechanic in the game. We talked a little bit earlier today about how Blizzard would implement that kind of mechanic, and I would love them to see them do that kind of thing, because that would open up more counterplay. You being able to do something on your opponent's turn.
The idea we had that we kind of talked about was basically when this procs, it starts a 10-second timer where I can, if it procs for me, I could choose the target, and if I don't make a choice in 10 seconds, it just resolves. And then the opponent's turn timer is adjusted for however much time that took away from his turn. So that's at least two core pieces of tech right there, possibly even three. But hey, we're making made up cards in the sky. We can dream.
Yeah, and I think it's a mechanic that I don't know if they're working on it already, if they want to, but I think it's something that Hearthstone needs to go the distance, but we'll see.
Yeah, and it doesn't seem like it'd be too unnatural.
No, it's something that exists in other card games, specifically Magic, which is what Hearthstone was inspired by. I'm not just making that up. The dev team said that.
I will say, though, I really do like how fast Hearthstone goes compared to Magic, where every time your opponent wants to do something, you have to say, oh, that's okay. That's okay. That's okay. You can do it. That's okay. So I do like the idea of it maybe only proccing off of secrets or like damage on minions or something like that, like limited events. So it's not every time they want to play a card, you have to say, I'll allow it.
Right. And that's, probably the reason why it may never exist is because I think if it did exist, it would be limited. I could even see a version of this card where it's something like, it targets the opponent instead, or, something like that.
Totally. All right. So what is your card of the week that you made to go along with it?
So it's a one mana minion, because I think that's a great design space. There are lots of good one mana minions now. A lot of them either get nerfed or end up in wild. But we talked a lot about mana worms, so I thought Rogue should have something like that. Rogue has an okay one mana minion now, the one that gives you a random card from your opponent's class. The pirate guy, whatever his name is, Swashbuckler. So it's a 1 mana, 1/3. His battle cry is put a random rogue secret into the battlefield. You made a bunch of other secrets that I got to see. And I was really, for some reason, I don't know, I know why, my D&D group, the campaign I'm running, last time we played, most of the night the characters were hanging out in a bar, and there was a character there that they don't know is actually evil or on their opponent's side kind of thing. So I was really kind of picturing that in mind with this minion. So the minion's name is Shady Bar Patron.
And the art is perfect for it. It's super cool.
Yeah, it took me a while to Google image search to find something that would work exactly. And I was like, that's it. That guy looks shady.
Yeah, that's half the fun of designing cards, is getting to find the art that feels right for it.
Right, yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah, this is a great card. And it fits, I mean, like you said, I mean, the 1-drop 1/3 with a cool effect for class cards, that's a staple now. I think it fits perfectly in.
Yeah, and it does something. At least it doesn't do nothing later in the game, especially for Rogue. You know, it can proc a combo. It's a great turn one play for Rogue, because then it can kill something with 2 health with a hero power. And it might survive to, you know, to trade again or you know, help kill something else.
Yeah.
And it also helps, you know, 0 mana secrets probably wouldn't be played in a lot of decks, kind of like Paladin secrets don't, but this makes those cards, you know, actually relevant to the game. I like to see cards that do that, that bring out cards that people might forget about.
Yeah, that's very true. Cool. So if you want to check out some of the other secrets I made, it's all on Twitter. I tweet it pretty regularly, but you can also just search for hashtag commute card design and see all the cards I design.
I think you should, all right, if you should take a look at them, at least for the names alone. You got some great card names here.
Thanks. I like the Rogue one.
That's good. My favorite is Experimental Plague. Like, just the idea.
So good. The crazy scientist on there.
Yeah.
Doing his thing. Cool. So, let's see. If you want to check out the deck that Jarrett made, or watch the deck battle of us fighting. And actually, so right now, I'm having trouble finding my video on Twitch. So I don't know if my video is going to end up on there, but you can watch Jarrett's side of it and see the matches play out. I'm going to keep trying to find it and see what happened. Maybe it went to a different channel or something. But in theory, you can watch live stream of us dueling there as well. But if nothing else, the deck list will be there with all of Jarrett's commentaries and a sideboard suggesting cards for the future to add in there, and other cards if you don't have some of the legendaries to swap in. All that on GameTipMatt.com, and as always, we'd love to know what you thought of the show and what you'd like to see added in future episodes. You can find us on Google+, Happy Hearthstone, Twitter at JAugustine, or email thehappyhearthstone@gmail.com, or just leave a comment on the blog. Oh, and I want to make a quick note. Craig, who's been on the show several times, and who's been the moderator of the Google+ community basically since its existence, is bowing out. So I'm really bummed, but he's done a lot for this community and a lot for this show. He also helped build our awesome spreadsheet that we're using for our next review episode, which will be publicly available so everyone can see what scores we give every card and all that sort of stuff. But he's just done a lot of work moderating the community and doing well, but he's just decided it's time to move on from Hearthstone. And so I just wanted to wish him the best and thank him for all the awesome work he's done over the years. He's been really great, and he hasn't gotten paid, gotten nothing out of it. He's just done it to kind of help make this community greater. So thank you very much, Craig. We appreciate that. And if you enjoyed the show, please consider supporting us. You can find more information at gamediplomat.com/donate. All right, grr noise. Where can people find you?
Well, I am a member of that Google+ community, which I just want to mention that just to also thank Craig for his work and say that it's not the most active Hearthstone community, which may be a good thing compared to some of the Reddit stuff we discussed, but it's definitely a welcoming one, and I think a good one to check out if you haven't. But as far as my stuff goes, I'm on Twitter. Is probably the best way to get in touch with me or find links to stuff. That's at Gurnoise, which is GRRNoise. Gurnoise, GRRNoise on Twitter. My Battle.net, if you want to play some Hearthstone, or I think I'm getting Overwatch for Christmas, so should be playing that more soon on PS4. But that's also Gurnoise, spelled the same way, and it's hashtag 1441. hit me up on there, or if you want it, just tweet me. And then if you liked the music, want more, or just want to see what kind of music I like, I'm on SoundCloud. You can just search for Gurnoise. I made sure that if you search that way with Gurnoise with a space after the Gur, you can find me.
Sweet. Awesome. So thank you very much. And if you want to check out my other show, Game Diplomat, we're going to have another episode next week. We're playing Subnautica, which is an awesome underwater survival game on an alien planet. And it's rad. So, Jarrett, thanks for coming on. Thanks for fighting through the entire gauntlet, coming victorious, giving hope to all future deck battlers.
Yeah, thanks for having me, and thanks for being patient with the technical issues.
Yeah, we got through it. It was fun. Yeah, it was great having you on the show. Congratulations again on winning.
All right,
your throne, or your throne. You have the throne. The crown awaits.
Can't wait.
All right, and everyone else, thanks again for visiting the Happy Hearthstone and having a little fun with us. We'll see you next time.